You are listening to continuing coverage of the trial of Chad Daybell from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Let's go back to the courtroom.
Courtroom marshals are here maintaining order in the courtroom and working with you jurors in where you'll be during the proceedings today. And our court reporter is seated down to my left. That's Mary Fox, who takes a stenographic record of all the proceedings. And finally, my staff attorney, Courtney Stallings, is seated to the far right, and she assists me with legal research and administrative issues that come up throughout the day. Each one of you is qualified to serve as a juror of this court, and you've all filled out a questionnaire that's now been reviewed by counsel and the court, and it was determined you could be recalled for further questioning. The first thing we're doing in this trial is to select a total of 18 jurors, which will be 12 trial jurors and 6 alternates from among you. The clerk at this time is going to go through a roll call of each of you using your red card number, and we'll start at the front row with juror 112. But Madam Clerk, at this time, would you please go through the roll call of the jurors?
My card number, if you could. Say that you're here audibly. Juror 112.
Here.
Juror 1623.
Here.
Juror 1624.
Here.
Juror 1640.
Here.
Juror 1747.
Here.
Juror 1758.
Here.
Juror 1761.
Here.
Juror 1793.
Here.
Juror 240.
Here.
Juror 250.
Here.
Juror 265.
Here.
Juror 311.
Here.
Juror 328.
Here.
Juror 438.
Here.
Juror 512.
Here.
Juror 537.
Here.
And Juror 657.
Here.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, everyone, for your attendance again. To assist you in understanding and participating in the jury selection process, I'm going to reintroduce you to the parties and their attorneys. I'd ask each of your name is called to briefly stand and face the jury panel, then retake your seat. The case has been brought by the state of Idaho, sometimes referred to by me as the prosecution. The state is represented at this trial by Lindsay Blake, prosecutor for Fremont County, Idaho, Rob Wood, prosecutor for Madison County, Idaho, Ingrid Beatty, a specially appointed prosecutor in this case, and Rocky Whitsum, a deputy prosecutor for Fremont County, Idaho. The defendant in this case, Mr. Chad Guy Daybell, is represented by his attorney, John Pryor. This case is a criminal matter, which means the defendant has been charged by the state of Idaho with a violation of the law. Last week, when you completed your questionnaires, I read to you a summary of the amended indictment containing the charges. With regard to the defendant, the state of Idaho has alleged that the defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, committed the crimes of count one, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception, count two, first degree murder, count three, conspiracy to commit first degree murder and grand theft by deception, count four, first degree murder, count five, conspiracy to commit first degree murder, count six, first degree murder, count seven, insurance fraud, and count nine, insurance fraud. The defendant, Mr. Daybell, has pled not guilty to the charges. Please remember this is simply a description of those charges and it is not evidence. Under our law and system of justice, every defendant is presumed to be innocent. This means two things. First, the defendant has the burden of proving, first, the state has the burden of proving the defendant guilty. The state has that burden throughout the trial, and the defendant is never required to prove his innocence, nor does the defendant ever have to produce any evidence at all. Second, the state must prove the alleged crime beyond a reasonable doubt. A reasonable doubt is not a mere possible or imaginary doubt. It is a doubt based on reason and common sense. It may arise from a careful and impartial consideration of all the evidence or from a lack of evidence. If after considering all the evidence, you have a reasonable doubt about the defendant's guilt, you must find the defendant not guilty. I'll next discuss your duty as jurors. Your duty as jurors is to determine the facts and then apply the law set forth in my instructions to the facts. In this way, you will decide the case. In applying the court's instructions as to the controlling law, You must follow those instructions regardless of your opinion of what the law is or what the law should be or what any lawyer may state the law to be. During the course of this trial, including the jury selection process, you are instructed that you are not to discuss this case among yourselves or with anyone else, including through use of email, text messaging, social media, or any other form of communication, electronic or otherwise. Do not conduct any personal investigation or look up any information from any source, including the internet. Do not form an opinion as to the merits of the case until after the case has been submitted to you for your determination. At this time, then, I am going to request that the clerk place the entire jury panel under oath for the voir dire examination. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, if you please rise and raise your right hands. I'll have to start to do that now.
Do you solemnly swear or affirm that you will truthfully answer such questions as may be asked of you by court or counsel, touching upon the qualifications to sit as a trial juror in the Boston Allen trial, so help you God?
Yes.
Thank you. Please be seated. In this part of the jury selection, you'll be asked questions touching on your qualifications to serve as jurors in this particular case. This part of the case is known as the voir dire examination. That is an ancient Anglo-Norman term dating back hundreds of years to the origins of the common law, and in Old French, it simply means to speak the truth. Voir dire examination is for the purpose of determining if your decision in this case would in any way be influenced by opinions which you now hold, or by some personal experience or special knowledge which you may have concerning the subject matter to be tried. The object is to obtain 12 persons who can impartially try the issues of this case upon the evidence presented in this courtroom without being influenced by any other factors. Please understand that this questioning is not for the purpose of prying into your personal affairs, but only for the purpose of obtaining an impartial jury. Whenever you need to answer a question, you can raise your red card. When you're called upon to speak, please make a verbal response to any questions so we make a clear record, and try to avoid talking at the same time as anyone questioning you, again, so the record is clear. I'll note at this time also that these proceedings are being broadcast on the court's official YouTube channel. You are not being filmed or videoed. However, your audible answers are part of that public access through the court's channel. So with that in mind, if you have an answer to any question that you feel would be potentially embarrassing or just something you don't want to discuss open in the public, then please let me know and we'll arrange to have a more private setting where you can discuss that with the court or attorneys asking you. Also, if you have an answer to any question you think could prejudice or bias any of the other jurors here, please refrain from that, and we will discuss that again outside the presence of other jurors. Additionally, many of you may have knowledge of this case from pretrial media coverage and publicity. If you do, please do not discuss in front of the other jurors any specific facts or details of the case. We'll talk to you individually about those as well. And that way, we can try to maintain impartiality through what you know not being communicated to other jurors. I'm going to now read you a special instruction that I'm providing in this case, and that's as follows. The defendant, Chad Guy Daybell, has been charged in the amended indictment with certain counts of entering into a conspiracy with Lori Vallow Daybell and or Alex Cox. The crime of conspiracy involves an agreement by two or more persons to commit a crime. You must only consider the evidence against the defendant in this case and should not speculate as to any other case or legal proceedings involving the alleged co-conspirators. You must remember that the defendant has the presumption of innocence, and you must consider his guilt or innocence based solely on the evidence provided in this case. That concludes the court's special instruction. At this time, I would instruct the attorneys for both parties to avoid repeating questions already asked and answered. The attorneys do have the right, however, to direct follow-up questions or questions answered by the jurors. Also, for the jury, you should be aware that during and following this voir dire examination, one or more of you may be challenged. Each side can challenge you for cause, meaning they can ask you to be excused for some specific reason. In addition, each side has a number of what are called peremptory challenges, and that means they can challenge you and ask you to be excused without giving any reason for the dismissal. If you are excused by either side, please do not feel offended or feel that your honesty or integrity has been questioned. It is not. I'll also mention that if you are excused and anyone approaches you or wishes to talk to you about the case, with your excusal, you're no longer a potential juror in the case. However, please be aware that we are seeking to obtain an impartial jury in this case. You may refuse to answer questions if asked by the media. Otherwise, please be respectful of your fellow jurors as well as our process in seeking to obtain an impartial jury if you do choose to make any comments. At this time, the court is going to begin its own voir dire of the jury, and after that, the attorneys for the state and the defense will be permitted to ask their questions as well. So the first matter I'll take up relates to what you've already filled out here. You were given both juror information forms as well as a questionnaire. So starting with the juror information forms, if I'm going to ask, is the information you provided in those forms still true and accurate? If it is, please raise your red card. All right, we have one juror that's a more or less juror 250. And this isn't necessarily the questionnaire yet, just the juror information form. Is there something that has potentially changed there?
I'm sorry, are we talking about
That's the questionnaire.
Okay.
The form is just, you know, where you live, et cetera, that you're a resident of Ada County. That was something that would have been filled out, I think, before the when the summons came.
My wife's title at her job is the thing that I wrote down and read.
Okay. We'll address that here in a moment on questionnaires. So in addition, of course, you completed this lengthy questionnaire last week. And I'll ask, is if you believe all the information in your questionnaire is still true and accurate, please raise your red card. Okay. And then juror 250, that was your only correction there you wanted to put on the record.
I suppose one more. I wrote that I would only have 3 weeks of PTO at my organization. This would actually be paid in full if I were to do this.
Okay, thank you for that further information. We'll note that as we go through our questioning. That will lead us right into that issue coming up next then. The time commitment in this case, if you're...
I approach it downstairs.
Okay. All right. The court just inquired on the accuracy of the questionnaires and information forms. There was a question for juror 328. Did you, in fact, raise your card, or is there something that needs to be changed?
I did not. I have an amendment to my medical condition has changed since I filled this out.
Okay. We will bring that up with you also once we get into more specific questioning. So thank you for that information. In this matter, then, the case is going to take from 8 to 10 weeks to go through trial. And given that time frame, the court recognizes that's a difficult amount of time. Therefore, we've asked you questions about whether or not that may create a serious hardship for you. So I'm going to ask you, would that length of time of service create a serious hardship upon you or your family or your business or profession or occupation to prevent you from rendering service as a fair and impartial juror in this case? If you think you would have such a hardship, please raise your red card. Okay, if you'll hold those up for a moment, we'll note each of those. Okay, thank you. All right, on the issue of hardship then, let's start on the front row with, if you give me just a moment to locate your questionnaire, juror 1747. All right, I'll note in your questionnaire, you didn't indicate there was a hardship. Can you explain what has changed that you think would be a hardship for you?
So we just discharged our last employee, and now I'm an owner-operator of a single-man company.
So at the time you filled out the questionnaire, you had help, and now you don't?
Correct. Yeah.
Okay, and is this business your sole source of income?
It is.
Explain to me what would happen if you were here doing this full time for 10 weeks, given that situation.
Probably lose contracts, no source of income to pay rent, utilities, those kind of things.
And again, that's a change that occurred just in the last week here?
Correct, yes.
All right, let me ask the state if the state has some follow-up order for this year on hardship.
No, Your Honor, given that information today, the state would move to strike this juror for cause based on hardship.
And Judge, the defense would move to strike him for cause for hardship as well.
All right. Well, juror 1747, I agree that that would constitute a hardship preventing him from serving in this case because it is a very long trial. So thank you so much for taking your time to complete your questionnaire and to return today. The court thanks you as well as the parties. You can be excused with the thanks of the court, and please drop your questionnaire off to the bailiff on your way out. All right, the next juror we'll talk to is 1793. All right, this juror also did not indicate a hardship in the questionnaire. Can you explain what's going on that you believe would constitute a hardship?
My work will only be within 10 days of being on jury and being with him on trial. Maybe I've covered my bills.
And you have confirmed that with your employer?
I have.
All right. And do you have any other source of income? All right. Any questions from the state on voir dire on the hardship issue?
No, Your Honor. Given that additional information, the state would actually make a motion to strike this juror for cause based on hardship.
Judge, the defense would concur and also make a motion to strike for hardship.
All right, juror 1793, given that situation with your employer, that being your sole source of income, the court finds the length of this trial would constitute a financial hardship. So thank you also for filling out your questionnaire and returning. You can be excused. Let's next talk to juror number 265. You indicated three different things on the questionnaire. We wanted to follow up on some more specifics with those. So why don't you just indicate on the three items you listed in your questionnaire how you believe that would constitute a hardship if you were required to serve juror 265?
And mainly because of my kids and their parents. So my parents are in care, they're in memory care, and they have severe dementia. I do check on them every day to help with activities of daily living. I also take them to medical, dental, vision appointments. And they do have a number of things coming up.
Is there anyone else that would be able to step in for that length of time and potentially cover those responsibilities?
No.
Okay. And
so is it possible for me to reschedule that and then delay everything for several months? The answer is yes, although some of these appointments have been scheduled or on the books for months now, but nobody to cover that.
Okay. And well, if there's no one else to cover, there's that. But do you believe this would also, if you were worrying about that situation throughout the trial, would that potentially create a distraction for you where you'd be concerned enough about your parents that it would make it difficult for you to pay attention here during each day?
No.
All right. What was the other issue you had as well?
I think the other one that I put down was just that I have kids in elementary school, and so it would be a bit of a challenge, not insurmountable, but a bit of a challenge in terms of finding child care and rescheduling their appointments as well. So I'm starting to travel with them.
All right, I'll let the state inquire.
Your Honor, we actually had a note here to follow up with this juror based on some of her comments in the hardship section. Given her statements here today, the state would make a motion to strike this juror for cause based on hardship.
All right, from the defense.
And Judge, I would just like to inquire a few things. The there's family travel plans the 24th through the 30th, is that right?
That's May, so Memorial Day. Okay. I know there's one soccer tournament for the kids.
And obviously those probably can't be rescheduled. I know the answer.
Soccer tournament, no. Family travel, yes.
Judge, I'll concur with the state and move to strike this this particular potential juror for cause as well.
All right. Given the expressed hardship for those reasons, I think primarily for the care of the parents issue, the court will determine that juror 265 has expressed a hardship requiring excusal from the case. So thank you for coming in and completing your questionnaire last week and returning today.
Thank you.
Next juror will bring up will be juror number 311. Juror 311, I'm inclined to perhaps just have a quick sidebar over in the white noise area with this juror briefly on the hardship issues, if that's okay with counsel.
Yes, Judge.
All right, juror 311, if you don't mind, if you could just step down for a moment. Author, stand by for a minute. Thank you. We can resume the broadcast if that was halted momentarily there. We're back on the record. The court reviewed in private with juror 311 the hardship issue. Counsel agreed, and the court knows that would constitute a hardship. Is the state have an objection to 311 being excused?
No, Your Honor. We would stipulate to this juror being excused for hardship.
Thank you. From the defense.
Defense is also going to stipulate to hardship.
All right, juror 311, you are excused with the thanks of the court. Thank you for returning today and for filling out your questionnaire. Please drop that copy off with the bailiff and you may be excused. We'll next talk to juror 328. All right, juror 328, you've expressed a concern about plans you have assisting with the work camp in May 26th through the 31st. I wanted to confirm, is that still plans you've got?
Yeah.
All right, can you explain what would occur if you were to miss that?
I help plan and run that camp and I have for 23 years, so I just be there to do that, and I have people that count on me to be there, so I wouldn't be able to do that.
All right, and I won't keep pressing, but I'll just ask, have you thought about or
There's a group of staff there, so I'm sure they would find someone to lead my team in my place. It would take them a bit, but I'm sure they'd find someone.
All right, let me inquire of the state if you've got any proposed regard for this juror.
Your Honor, we had a note on this as well, given the representation that there was this camp and the strong desire to attend it and the commitment that had been made to it. Given all of that information, the state would make a motion to remove this juror for cause based on hardship.
Defense would concur.
All right. Well, sounds like a good cause you're involved in. Thank you for that. The timing is not probably going to work for that for this trial. So based on that, the court does find that will constitute hardship. And with the motion of both the defense and the state, you'll be excused for that reason. Thank you for completing your questionnaire and coming back today. I think that includes those that raised their red cards, but I may have missed one. Is there somebody else that raised a red card in response to that question? All right. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I'll next go into the area of previous knowledge of this case, if you do have any. This case has been publicized widely. If you do have any knowledge of the case that you've obtained through radio, television, newspapers, podcasts, etc., would you please raise your red card? Okay, if you'll hold those up again for a moment, we'll take those up one by one. All right, for those of you with those answers, we'll simply address those individually with you during the next section when we don't have the others present for those discussions. I'll next move on to the subject matter of this case, and that involves, as you've heard, charges of murder, conspiracy, and insurance fraud. Is there anything about those particular charges that you think would make it impossible or difficult for you to fairly and objectively evaluate the evidence in this case and to render a verdict? Okay, no one answered affirmatively for that. Next set of questions I'll ask might seem overly obvious to you, but certain state statutes require that I ask these questions to make sure there's no connection between you and either the parties or the defendant in the case. So, are any of you related by blood or marriage to the defendant, or do you know him from any kind of business or social relationship? All right, no one answered affirmatively. Do any of you have any kind of a legal relationship with any of the attorneys, including a relationship of guardian and ward, master and servant, employer and employee, creditor and debtor, landlord and tenant, or boarder or lodger? So any of those types of relationships between you and any lawyers? All right, no one answered yes to that. Are any of you jurors a party in any kind of a civil action, lawsuit, or anything else against the defendant, Mr. Daybell? No one answered yes. Have any of you ever brought a criminal complaint against the defendant, Mr. Daybell? Or have any of you ever been accused of any crime by any of these prosecutors that are here present today? All right, no one answered to that. Do any of you have any kind of attorney-client relationship, either current or previous in the past, with Mr. Pryor or his law firm? No answer to that. Do any of you have any relationship by blood or marriage to any of the lawyers here, or do you know them from any kind of professional business or social relationship? All right, no one responded to that. Have any of you formed or expressed an unqualified opinion that the defendant is guilty or not guilty of the offense charged? Okay, no one responded to that. Do any of you have any kind of bias or prejudice, either for or against the defendant, Chad Guy Daybell? No one answered that question. Are any of you unwilling to follow my instructions to you as the jury to apply the law in determining this case? There's no response to that. Do any of you have any kind of religious or moral position that would make it impossible for you to sit in judgment of another or to render a fair and impartial verdict? No one answered that affirmatively. Are there any of you that, if you're selected as a juror in this case, would be unwilling or unable to render a fair and impartial verdict based upon the evidence presented in this courtroom and the law instructed by the court? No one answered that affirmatively. And finally, a catch-all question for you. Is there any other reason why you would not be able to give this case your undivided attention and render a fair and impartial verdict? Okay, no one answered that, so that will conclude the court's voir dire of this jury panel. At this time, I'll allow the state to proceed with its voir dire. I'll next have the defense follow up. So, Ms. Blake, you can proceed.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, we appreciate you being back this afternoon and hanging in there with us. We know this has been a process. You were all here last week, and now you're here again today. Just to kind of talk to you a little bit about why we do this, is as we go through this selection process, we want to ensure that we get jurors that can be impartial and that can sit and hear the evidence and provide it the weight that it's due and then ultimately render a decision in this matter. Both the defendant, Mr. Chad Daybell, and the state of Idaho both deserve a fair trial. And so that's why we go through this process. As we go through it, I may ask some questions. I may ask people to give me some answers, and I may call on a few people as we go through this process. I don't want anyone to think I'm picking on you. That's just what we're trying to do, is select a jury. And for that reason, to ensure a fair trial to both, to everyone here today. So with that being said, I'm going to ask you to think about the term brutal honesty. And your 1761, if I use the term brutal honesty, what comes to mind for you?
Being totally honest, whether it feels good or not.
Thank you. And juror 1758, how about you?
I thought about a club.
And if you hear the term honesty, what do you mean?
Fair.
Fair? Okay. And I don't know about all of you, but do you all have someone in your life that maybe doesn't hold back? They're going to tell you the truth no matter what, even if it hurts your feelings. They're just going to give it to you straight. Do we all have someone like that? So for me, I had my first niece when she was younger. I learned pretty quickly she could be that person for me. She was young, didn't have the filter, and did not hold back. So if I truly wanted to know how an outfit looked or anything, she was going to give it to me straight. So to me, she was my brutally honest person. In this case, the judge has already talked to you about the charges. So we have multiple counts of conspiracy to commit first-degree murder, and we have multiple counts of first-degree murder. With these type of cases, oftentimes the evidence that may be presented can contain graphic images. And in this case, we have two children that were murdered, a mother of five. So you may see photos, autopsy photos or otherwise, that may be graphic. Is there anyone here that would have concerns about looking at those type of photos? And juror 1758, you indicated you may have some concerns. Can you talk to me a little bit about what those would be?
Rather not say.
And I should have started out this way. And I know the judge said, if there's ever anything that you'd be more comfortable talking about outside of the group setting, we can absolutely do that. Is this maybe a situation like that where you'd like to talk outside of the group, or would you rather just not say in general? Can I ask you, if you were to be instructed by the court that you have to review all evidence, hear all testimony, and then ultimately it would be up to you to give it the weight it's due, do you feel that whatever concerns you have in seeing those type of images would be so great that you couldn't just give that type of evidence the weight that you felt it was due?
Maybe.
You do have concerns about that? Do you feel that your concerns are such that you don't believe that you could sit and be fair and impartial in the case if you were to see images that you found disturbing?
Yes.
Your Honor, I think with those answers, the state would make a motion to remove juror 1758 for cause.
And Judge, I would stipulate to that.
All right. I've considered those responses as well as responses in the juror's questionnaire. I do find there are grounds to support the challenge. So, juror 1623, we appreciate your honesty and candor.
And, Your Honor, I believe that was juror 1758.
Thank you for that important correction. We'll go ahead and sustain the strike for that juror. Thank you for returning today and for filling out your questionnaire last week, and that will conclude your service. All right, you can continue with Fort Dyer.
Thank you, Your Honor. And when I talk to you about brutal honesty, that's exactly what we're talking about, is we want to ensure that people can be honest and completely honest as we're going through this jury selection process. And then later on, when you're given instructions from the judge and you're allowed to go and talk about the evidence and deliberate if you're chosen to be on the jury, then you get that opportunity. But we need to make sure that anyone that's doing that can be brutally honest. So I appreciate juror 1758's very candid responses as we go through this. Juror 1640, would you have concerns about seeing those type of images?
I think seeing those images just on humanity side of things would be difficult. I don't believe it would impact a decision.
You feel that you could just weigh them in and give them the weight you feel they're due in relation to all the evidence presented? Would that be fair? Thank you. Have all of you been on a plane before? I see nods from everyone. So when you get on the plane, at some point, the pilot or the stewardess comes on and announces, you know, sit back, enjoy the flight. We're going to arrive at our destination at such and such time. If instead of that, the pilot came over the intercom or the PA system and said, hey, I'm going to try to land the plane and I think we'll get there this time, how many of you would feel comfortable staying on that plane? I see some people shaking their heads. No, I don't see any shaking their heads. Yes. So juror 438, would you feel comfortable staying on that plane? And why wouldn't you feel comfortable?
Just, it's unsure.
The uncertainty of it. And juror 250, how about you?
I wouldn't feel comfortable.
And why wouldn't you feel comfortable?
Because I don't think that they'd be qualified for what they're doing.
I appreciate that. And I want to let you know where I'm going with that. And the reason that we give that analogy is, as I've already talked about, we're trying to select jurors that can be fair and impartial, because both the defendant, Chad Daybell, and the state are both entitled to a fair trial. So similar to the pilot, we want to make sure that we get jurors that can land the plane. So jurors that can be fair and impartial, weigh all the evidence, give it the weight that they feel it's due, and then ultimately meet together to deliberate and reach a conclusion. And so, again, when we talk about the brutal honesty, if at any point someone has concerns about that, please just let me know. I have a little one, and in the mornings when we get up, one of his favorite things to do is he wants to make me a cup of coffee. But when he makes that cup of coffee, we have a coffee machine, and there's certain directions that you have to follow to use that coffee machine. So you've got to open the top, put the pot in, close it, and hit the button to brew the coffee. So he's learned how to do that. I don't know, do any of you have experience with that? Electronics or coffee machines? Everyone used them before? And they all come with a set of instructions or directions that we have to follow. And in everyone's experience, if you follow those directions, barring there being something wrong with the appliance, does it generally work? So in this case, as we go through things, at some point, the court has given you one instruction or a couple instructions, but one was given today. As we go through this process, the judge will give you even more instructions. And some of those instructions are going to deal with the crimes charged, and they're going to lay out what the elements are that the state has to prove. And the state has the burden of proof in this case, no question about that. And the court will instruct on what elements the state has to prove with each charge. So as you go through those, similar to the instructions to use an appliance, you'll follow those. Now, some people might say, well, maybe I could modify the appliance and make it work. Maybe if I add this to it, it makes the appliance work better. But here in the courtroom, we don't get to do that. So you may look at those jury instructions and you may think, man, I don't think they should have to use this element, or man, they should really have to prove this element. Can everyone commit that you would set any of those thoughts aside and only follow the instructions as given by this court? And could everyone commit that regardless of if someone tried to instruct you differently, or if someone tried to convince you that you didn't have to follow that instruction, that you would stick with whatever instructions given by the court and only follow that one? Thank you for that. With some of these charges, they involve the crime of homicide. And in those, and again, the court will be the one to give you the instructions, but you'll be told that the state has the burden to prove that a homicide happened, but one of the elements is not going to be that the state has to prove the cause of death. Would that cause anyone concerns in being able to follow the instruction as given by the court? Would anyone be concerned and say, well, I think the state should have to prove this, and so we're going to hold them to an additional element? No one would do that. Thank you. Does anyone here watch football? I see some people, kind of. Okay. Juror 1624. Or no, sorry. 1623. I think you're the one that was kind of, said kind of. So this year in the Super Bowl, Kansas City Chiefs won. And some people may be happy about that, some may not. But regardless of your feelings of who won, would you agree that everyone on the team should get a ring?
Yes.
A Super Bowl ring. So even if you look at it and you say, man, the quarterback did a lot more, would you agree the punter should also get a ring, and the coach, and even the second string that may not have even played on the field? Because they're all part of it.
Thank you.
And I'll ask, I think, juror 240, you said you kind of watch football.
Yeah.
Do you feel the same way? Should everyone on the team get a ring? And why do you think they should all get a ring?
A lot of times it's not a player's choice if they're on the second string. I'm sure they would have loved to be on the field too, but I figure if they're part of the team, they deserve a ring.
Thank you. The judge has given you one instruction regarding conspiracy, and he's talked about two co-conspirators in this case, or two named co-conspirators, Rory Vallow, Daybell, and Alex Cox. And you've been told and instructed by the court that you shouldn't concern yourselves with anything that may or may not have gone on with regard to those two co-conspirators. And everyone has committed, you can follow the court's instruction, right? What you will hear about in this trial is some evidence and testimony regarding those co-conspirators. You may hear evidence and testimony regarding actions that they're alleged to have done. You'll also be given instructions regarding a conspiracy. And you'll be, and we'll talk about the fact that it involves an agreement between two or more persons to commit a crime. And then in addition to that, that one of those individuals, just one, has to do some kind of act in furtherance. So one person has to do something to try to further that conspiracy or that agreement to carry out a crime. Does anyone have concerns if you were to hear that person A, maybe, person A, B, and maybe C agree to something, and only person A does another act? Could everyone here commit to follow the court's instruction regarding what's required for a conspiracy? And that would include that only one of them had to do an act in furtherance. Does that cause anyone concern? If today you had gotten out of bed and come to court, and as you left home, the sky was turning a little bit gray, and you came in the courtroom and we shut all the windows and you couldn't see outside, and when you get outside, you notice there's rain all over your car, the grass is wet, the pavement's wet, you start to drive home and you see everything's wet, would you be able to determine what happened? Okay. I see people nodding their heads yes. And you're 1624, now I'll come to you. What would you determine had happened?
Obviously, rain.
Thank you. And juror 438, how about you?
Same thing. If it rained, it hailed and something, you got wet.
And juror 512?
If it rained.
And would you be able to make that determination without actually seeing the rain? So in this case, you may hear different types of evidence, and you may hear the term circumstantial evidence. Do any of you have a problem with weighing all the evidence presented and giving it the weight it's due and reaching your conclusion? Would anyone here say, if I don't see this particular type of evidence, I'm not going to be able to consider everything in this case? Does anyone come in here today with a preconceived notion that if someone's charged with homicide, we have to see this specific piece of evidence? Nobody? And Judge, I don't have any additional questions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Blake. Mr. Pryor, you can commence with the defense or diary this time.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. We're here today because obviously we have a disagreement between the state of Idaho, the prosecutors, and the defense. Part of the process that you're involved in is for us to be able to ask you some questions, to talk to you about your feelings about a lot of subjects. And I understand that can be uncomfortable and can be difficult, but really, this is our opportunity, the prosecutors. They want to get to know you a little bit better, and I'd like to get to know you a little bit better, and all of your opinions are important. Every single one of your opinions are very important to us, because that's the only way we can determine if it's going to be a fair, partial trial. All of you folks kind of understand that? Okay. And one of the important things, and Ms. Blake was kind enough to point that out, that we need to talk to you about trying to be as honest, because there is no wrong answer. All of us come from many, many diverse backgrounds. All of us have many, many experiences. Most of you are a lot younger than me, and I have a much different experience than many of you who are still very young. Okay? So we all come from different backgrounds. We all have different ideas. And as you walk through this and see this process, you'll realize, oh, there's a lot of us that don't really agree on everything, and we just have different views. But that doesn't make anybody's view less important. So if I could just ask you, please don't be afraid to express your view. And again, if you're uncomfortable expressing something to me, just say it, and we can arrange for the judge to sit with us, and we can talk about it privately, because this isn't supposed to embarrass you. This isn't supposed to make you uncomfortable. It's just a chance for me to spend some time with you, a little bit of time, to get to know and see where you fit in terms of whether or not you might be a good juror for just this case. All of you, in going over this thing, I've realized that all of you would be great jurors in a lot of cases. But every case, like anything else, is always different. And that's kind of what we're going through, and that's what we're trying to accomplish here today, okay? So I'm going to start out with a couple of easy questions that I'm not going to, and if you don't know the answer to anything, just don't answer. Just say, you know, I don't know. And I'm fine with that, okay? So all of you heard the charges. Judge Boyce was kind enough to read the charges and let us know what we're here for. And obviously these folks know what we're here for, and I know what you're here for, or what Chad's here for. But when you heard the charges read, did anybody assume right off the bat that Chad was guilty of the charges? Can I see your, just raise your hand if you said, think he was? Nobody. Now, all a good number of you have had some exposure to media. And could I see a raise of hands on the red cards of those of you who have watched any kind of media as it relates to this case? So 112, 214, and 438. So 112, tell me a little bit about the media you watched.
I want to do this in individual voir dire, just in case it doesn't elicit any specific facts.
I was going to go with a very general, but I think I'll defer to the court and do it on in private.
All right, thank you.
So let's move on from the media exposure, because I think I can handle that differently. Does anybody believe that Chad should have to testify to prove his innocence? The judge is going to give you an instruction that's going to say, Chad is not required to testify. It's not his job to prove that he's innocent of these charges. Does everybody understand that? Okay. Does everybody understand that the prosecuting attorney is required to prove that Chad is guilty of these charges? Would anybody require Chad to prove that he's guilty of any charges? Raise your hands if you think Chad should prove that he's, that he's innocent of all of these charges. Anybody require Chad to prove that he's innocent? Juror 1112, you just hesitated.
Well, I was trying to, in my mind, understand what exactly you were asking, because it was like, I mean, he's here in court, so he has to somewhat, he's saying he's not guilty. So I was trying to decide how you were wording it. Okay. If I think he needs to be part of the versus him.
And that's what's part, that's really great part of this discussion we're going to have tonight. It's because I kind of want to delve into that a little bit and see what you think he should have to do to be part of this process. What do you think he needs to do?
I don't know. I feel like we will see all of the evidence, and I feel like he's already claimed he's not guilty. That's what he's saying.
Right.
So I feel like we just need to look at the evidence and make a decision for ourselves.
Okay.
I don't think he needs to do anything extra than the evidence that we're given, because I feel like that's what the court's going to give us, and that's what we're supposed to use.
Okay, thank you. And do you think it's necessary in order to come to a conclusion that he should have to present evidence? Okay, and does everybody understand that if Chad and I decided to, the state could put on their case and I could say, I don't need to show anything. And if the state hasn't done what they're trying to do in this case, all of you, the verdict would be not guilty. You folks understand that? Everyone raise your hands if you understand that. You just went, all right, thank you. Now, do any of you jurors know each other? Anybody know each other personally, friendships, otherwise? No? We're going to be sitting for long periods of time. And I happen to mention one of the older people here. I am. And sitting for much, and these young folks here, sitting for a long period of time, sometimes it's uncomfortable. Is there anybody here who has difficulty sitting for long periods? Okay, thank you. And even though both of you are much younger than I am, is there a limit, or is it going to be a problem for you to have to sit for a long period of time? It is?
Physically, yes.
Okay. Can you make it an hour or hour and a half, or is this going to push it a little bit? And if this is too private, we can go and talk to the judge privately if you'd like to do that.
No, it's a couple hours.
Okay.
I need to stand up after that.
And we're going to be doing this for 8 to 10 weeks, every day, 5 days a week. Is that going to be tough for you?
Not hopefully.
Do you think it was going to be tough enough that you're going to have trouble concentrating and focusing on the case?
No, I've got it out of mind.
Well, I don't want to question your mind, because I don't want to say how old she is, because she's really good at me. My mother is sharper than I am, and a lot smarter than I am. So I'm not questioning that, but I know I've been uncomfortable after sitting for 2 hours. I just want to make sure you're going to be okay. Be okay? Will you let us know if you change your mind on that? Will you bring you back? Promise me. Okay. And then we had juror number 512. Did I get your number right?
Yes.
Let's talk about the same thing. Like I said, because you're so much younger than I am, it's hard for me to believe that.
I get really restless, tingling through my body, restless leg syndrome. But I have medication that the doctor gave me for long overseas flights that I can take. It doesn't affect my ability to think, just makes things not so jumpy.
Okay.
I'm okay with that.
And are you going to be able to do this for like 8 or 10 weeks?
Yeah.
You sure? And if there's a problem, and again, the judge isn't going to let me get out with that. If I tell him that my legs hurt and I need to stand up, he's probably not going to let me do that. But for you, I'm pretty sure he's going to do that.
Don't hurt me, just jump.
Okay. Okay, thank you. I want to kind of get into this discussion about graphic pictures. And some of you have talked about some of the media exposure and other things. When you watch TV and you see startling pictures, would most of you agree with me that the reason they show those startling pictures is to get a reaction from them? Raise your hand if you agree with that. One person agrees with that. Okay. Is there anybody who would give me some other reason why media outlets or podcasts or any of these personalities display, tantalizing facts or pictures? Go ahead, juror.
That would be juror number 250.
Correct.
To get more viewers.
Okay. So it's kind of a self-serving thing. They sensationalize things. They inflate things. And they do it to try to get people to watch their show.
At the root, I would assume.
Okay. Now, if you're shown very graphic pictures, okay, it's going to be difficult not to have a reaction. Go ahead.
I don't know.
You don't think so?
Well, when I was growing up, I've seen a lot of gory videos. And it doesn't make sense.
Do you think that applies to the rest of these folks?
No, not at all. Not at any mean.
And juror number 1620. Oh my goodness. 1620.
My profession is safety, so I've seen a lot of really reaction would be just like, oh, but not a reaction to make a decision factor on it.
Okay, that's really where I'm kind of going. Because quite frankly, we're going to be looking at some very, very graphic pictures. Look at some tough pictures. These pictures are going to hurt your heart. It hurts your heart a lot. These pictures hurt my heart. But as juror number 1623 said, you may have a reaction, but you don't make a decision based on that reaction. Do you agree with that? Okay, does everybody understand that? So when you look at these graphic pictures, you can look at them, observe them, but does anybody think it's fair that when you look at these graphic pictures, you assign your reaction and immediately make Chad responsible for those? Is that fair? Would anybody raise their hand if they think that's fair by looking at graphic pictures and immediately say, well, it's all his fault? Does anybody believe that's fair? Please raise your hand if you think that's fair. Thank you. Okay.
Now, Ms. Blake was talking about the plane and getting on the plane. And if the pilot makes the comment that he does, you don't know what's going to happen to the plane. If you're trying to determine what's going to happen to the plane, would you call that trying to determine what's going to happen to the plane a guess? Because we don't know. Would everybody agree that that's a guess, or you're speculating what's going to happen to the plane? Would that be fair? Anybody disagree with that? No? Okay. So when you speculate or you guess about things, does everybody agree that could be problematic in a number of ways by speculating and guessing? And I see some heads shaking, and I see some people acknowledging that, and I'm going to pick on 1640 a little bit. I don't want to use pick on. I think what I'm going to say is I want to hear your opinion because it's important. And all of your opinions are important to me, all of them. And please, if I don't call you, it's not that I don't value your opinion. If anybody wants to say anything, please speak up. I want to hear it. But when you're making major decisions in your life, do you ever think that it's a good idea to guess or speculate about what you should do?
Try not to.
Right. And why do you try not to?
I need the numbers, Judge.
1640. Mm-hmm. Why do you try not
to? If it's a major decision in my life, I like to go with as much concrete facts as I can.
And you could understand how important that is, because if you're making a major decision, whether about yourself or about anybody else, it's extremely important that you make that major decision on concrete facts that you have. Would anybody disagree with that? Okay. 1761, you shook your head and you said, no, I wouldn't disagree with that. Do you think it's important that when you make a major decision, regardless of what it is, that you base it on concrete facts that you have at hand?
Yeah.
Should you guess about other things and speculate and say, well, maybe that kind of thing? Or should you really be making it on the concrete facts?
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. Juror number 657, you've sat there very quietly, and I also want to hear from you. I want to value your opinion. Tell me a little bit about speculation and guessing. Is that important when you're trying to make a decision on important things?
I think that you shouldn't just like guess on a whim on something or just think, oh, okay, yeah, I'll choose this or this. You really do need to weigh everything that you have in mind, whether it's been presented to you or you already have knowledge of it. Well, I guess that's kind of a poor way of wording it, but basically everything that you know of properly, that's been presented to you properly, you should weigh that.
Okay. Okay. And juror number 537, can I hear your thoughts on that a little bit?
Yes. It's really important, especially if it's going to be something that's going to affect you or affect those around you, that you make the best possible decision based on the information you have. You try to guess or anything like that, you're not taking the facts and you're not taking the code and making that decision. You're maybe letting your heart or somebody else's influence cause you to make a decision.
All right. And go ahead, I'm sorry, juror number 657, please.
Sorry, I just kind of wanted to reword what I said just to make sure I kind of get it across a bit more clearly.
Okay.
Basically, when it comes to making any sort of major decision, it's never, almost never a good idea just to guess, you know, on a whim or, you know, just assume, I guess you could say.
Right.
It's always very important to weigh information, weigh facts before you make, especially a big decision.
And would you all agree with me that it's never a good idea to speculate about facts? That what we should really do is look at what we have at hand and make a determination based on what we have at hand and not guess about other things, other possibilities. Would all of you agree with me on that?
There's more to come in the trial of Chad Daybell.
press subscribe so you don't miss any of our continuing coverage right here from True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers Podcast.